Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Mary Urena.
And this is Double Take. Mary, you and I do the heavy-duty film reviews. I have no problem offering you but just about anything that's complex, allegorical, and so on and so on. So I thought, this time, let's do something really light. Does it get lighter than Charade?
Not for the mashup genres that this film represents, no.
1963.
Yes, which automatically qualifies it as a classic because it's older than I am.
You're right. Yes, it is. Yeah, and Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn starring makes it pretty much a winner right from the gate.
Well, you have that. You have shot on location in Paris. You have Audrey dressed in couture from Givenchy.
Yes.
What's not to like about this setup of this film?
And Cary Grant aging just a bit, but nobody ages the way he did. I mean, he is just so elegant and so charming. I guess that's the best word for him.
Very much so. Yeah.
And he's the lead.
He is the lead. He was a reluctant lead. This film was directed by Stanley Donen, who was mostly known for directing musicals, including everybody's favorite musical, Singin' in the Rain. He and Cary were friends, but initially Cary turned down the script, one, because he was considering another film at the time, but two, he also felt the age difference between he and Audrey, which was 25 years, was a bit too great to overcome now that he was in his late 50s. He felt it might be a little creepy having him be the pursuer. And so when he did agree to do the film, the script was rewritten so that Audrey's character, Reggie, becomes the pursuer more so than he did in his role as, pick your name, Brian, Adam, Alexander, etc.
I think that the main one is Peter Joshua.
Peter Joshua. Well, that's how we first meet him.
I will talk a little bit later about the similarities with Alfred Hitchcock's work, and particularly
yes,
North by Northwest.
As we should, because this film is often identified as the greatest Alfred Hitchcock film that Alfred Hitchcock did not make.
Very good. What's the story, Mary?
So we meet Reggie and Peter at the ski resort in the Swiss Alps. Audrey is, or Reggie, is confessing to her best friend that she's going to return to Paris and ask for a divorce from her husband, who is named Charles Lampert. Meanwhile, while that conversation's happening, Charles is being murdered and tossed off a train somewhere.
First shot we have is off the train.
Yes, it is. He's being tossed off the train.
Yeah, and great shot of, I think, his blank look.
Yes, and an uncredited actor. I could not find out who played the role of Charles Lampert.
Yeah.
In returning to Paris, after having met Peter in the Swiss Alps, she enters an empty apartment that her husband has basically cleaned out, sold everything at auction. She finds out that he's murdered, and Peter shows up, having returned to Paris at the same time, and offers to help her. But we find out that her husband, not surprisingly, is not who she thought he was. And in fact, he has many people after him for $250,000 that they all collectively stole on an OSS assignment during World War II.
Isn't it funny, Mary, as you're talking, $250,000? What's that?
Well, today...
Yeah, I know.
It's in the millions of dollars.
Yes, I know it. Yeah, yeah. It always seems so funny when they're talking about it. I say, look, let's not fight over this small amount of money, but then we're talking how many years ago?
Yeah, yes, 50, this is...
60 years ago?
Yeah, 1963.
So I thought, Donen probably didn't know how amusing it would be 60 years later for them to be fighting over the scraps. And one other observation I've made is that Audrey Hepburn is such a cool actress. Even when she opens up the doors to her apartment and everything's gone, she's still holly-go-lightly cool. Something about that actress. I mean, many other actresses would be screaming to think that they'd lost all of their possessions. And she keeps it cool.
Well, and this script, I think, is written just with ideal dialogue. I mean, talk about banter between the character played by Cary Grant and the character played by Audrey Hepburn. And some of it was ad-libbed. And there are some lines, which I wish we could find out which lines were ad-libbed. Because, for example, Peter helps her find an apartment that she can live in. I guess it's a small boutique hotel. And it has an open elevator. And so they're getting off the elevator together to go to her room. And he makes the comment about the neighborhood where she lives, which is a direct lift from a song in My Fair Lady.
Yes.
And you see Audrey's face just tick a little bit, but they kept going with the scene. But there were so many things like that where I thought they're trying to get to each other. But the dialogue was so witty to begin with.
Yes.
And they were both, I think, at some of their comedic best, playing off each other and delivering those lines for these two characters. And I think it, when we talk about this being similar to Hitchcock, it is in terms of the story and the plot, but it has a less dark, sinister aspect to it and more of a light comedic and even romantic comedy aspect to it than most Hitchcock films.
I was thinking that this is probably due to Donan's extensive experience with musicals.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Very light touch with the characters.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what about these goons?
Well, it is a who's who of actors. We have Walter Matthau, James Coburn, George Kennedy, and most wouldn't know his name, but they would certainly recognize his face as Ned Glass. Really great character actor who played Doc in West Side Story. He plays the other goon. And one of the opening scenes after Regina/Reggie returns to Paris is the funeral for Charles. And it is the most outrageous, funniest funeral scene you will ever see in your entire life, because all three of the surviving goons show up. They basically want to make sure he's dead. And so one of them just looks at him. One of them brings a mirror and holds it in front of his face.
I think
it was James Coburn
text. Yeah, very cool.
Yes. And then George Kennedy comes in and stabs him with a needle.
Yes.
And they all just kind of barge in, go up to the casket, check it out, and leave or just sit back down. And those are the only people at the funeral other than the police detective, Reggie, and Reggie's best friend.
This is certainly an easy run for Walter Matthau. What's his character like in this? Interested in people out there have heard of Walter Matthau. Some know. My son is friends with his son, so that there's something about him that's important to me. But he seems to play a similar character.
In this role, plays what we believe to be a good guy. He is who Reggie meets with at the U.S. Embassy, and is told that her husband isn't who she thinks he is, and that they believe he has $250,000, and that these three men are after her, and that she needs to work with him to find the money. But that may not be all there is to say about that character. And in this case, he does not have much of a comedic role.
No.
Pretty much a straight forward role, but he was a great character actor and starred in many films. In terms of comedy, he was the original Oscar in The Odd Couple. Yes. And he had some great roles later on in life with Jack Lemmon opposite him. So he was just a great character actor, but because of his visage and dark coloring, he often played a bad guy.
Yeah, and it was a hangdog look that nobody has been able to replicate.
Yes, he did have a hangdog look with those jowls.
Yeah. Is this the kind of film, Charade, that contemporary audiences could enjoy?
There's a lot about it that doesn't stand the test of time, but it's so well written, so well acted, and so lush to be on location in Paris, seeing Audrey Hepburn dressed in Hubert de Givenchy haute couture, and the witty dialogue just really makes it a fun romp. And would it translate today to be remade in the same manner? No, it wouldn't, but it's a fun romp. I would recommend it.
Yes, I do so. And I do it when I've just got back from seeing a new version of The Mummy. which is by any standards grisly. And so this, even with the mirrors and the pinpricking of the corpse and so on, and even with that opening shot, there's no way can it put me off. it really seems benign.
Well, in some of almost similar to Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, we start to lose some of these characters, and not in pleasant ways.
And you can stream this.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Mary, as we're talking about Charade, it's the kind of film that you could introduce the young people to let them see what real star power was.
I would agree with that. Although I would say be careful on the age, because there are some themes that, and some of the deaths of the goon squad.
You're right.
Are a little gruesome.
Yeah. One, his face, I think it's Kennedy's face, is wrapped in.
Actually, that was Tex, James Coburn.
Oh, was that Coburn?
Yeah. Was suffocated in plastic.
Yeah.
The character played by Ned Glass is stabbed to death.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We don't see George Kennedy's death, but he does fall off a roof.
Yeah.
Herman falls off a roof.
At one point, he exposes an artificial hand.
He has a metal claw.
Which I thought was a really nice horror touch.
It throws back to the fact that all of these characters, Charles, these three guys, and Walter Mouther, are all connected because they were part of the same OSS troop on a mission during World War II. The fact that one of them has a war wound with an amputation is not surprising.
I thought we might speak for a minute about the director.
Stanley Donen?
Yes. Now, you mentioned his most famous film, Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
At least it was probably everybody's favorite musical, which he did direct.
And you know, I think he even did On the Town.
He might have, yes.
Yeah.
He predominantly worked in musicals, so this was definitely a different track for him.
And he did another that I liked. Not many people know about, Two for the Road.
Oh, yeah. We could Google it.
Yeah, we could. Appear ignorant.
It makes our show authentic.
Right. And another musical that's somewhat famous, Damn Yankees.
Yes.
He has a good pedigree. And The Pajama Game.
Yes.
I mean, all of these are light musicals. And
I think that's where the play between Reggie and Peter, I don't know what name to call him. He ends up with four or five different names
during the film.
But that just that light, airy banter between two people. And it also, because they have that interaction, you can understand why Reggie would trust him, even though his name keeps changing, his story keeps changing. But ultimately, because it is Cary Grant, he's not the bad guy here. It is a multi-generational film, and definitely a film that represents what you called star power, but just old Hollywood, and why you can see that Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn became the stars that they did, and how they carry the film.
Yeah, their costuming is so outstanding. Cary Grant, for instance, in North by Northwest, in just one elegant suit.
Yeah, I think it's the whole time.
Yeah,
he wears one suit,
yeah.
And it is very elegant. It's often considered to be the best suit in all of film history.
Yes. Tailored to perfection.
Oh,
yes. And she, of course, could have been a model.
Yeah, she could have been. And in fact, was. I don't think Funny Face was the first time that Givenchy dressed her. I think that was actually Sabrina. Those two films plus this film are just a glorious celebration of their lifelong friendship and partnership, and just how beautiful clothes could be.
Yes.
Not only that he designed, but that he designed for her and tailored for her.
Yeah.
And it makes sense in the film, because she arrives back to her apartment from however long this ski trip was. So the only clothing she actually has is what was in her suitcase. To their credit, they didn't have her dress in a lot of outfits. At most, she would have had 10. And so you actually see some things recycled that she wears throughout the course of this film, which I think takes place over 5 days. So that was refreshing as well, that they actually were realistic and didn't overextend the fact that Givenchy is dressing her, and
right.
She clearly thought she had a very wealthy lifestyle with her husband, Charles. So she would have dressed that way in Paris at the time. And it's so lush and beautiful to look at. And you fall in love with Audrey Hepburn all over again, not only because of that,
yes,
but because at this point she's in her early 30s. She's past that young ingenue stage.
Right.
And so she plays a mature woman who's clearly got issues she's dealing with, and she's at her comedic best as well. So it just is a really wonderful, wonderful role. And a lot of people like the film Breakfast at Tiffany's when she did play Holly Golightly a couple years later. But in comparison, I love her in this role more.
It's much more, well, it's much more even keeled than Holly Golightly.
Yes.
And less in your face, in a sense, as a character. This is more of a realistic character, but a classy, realistic character.
Absolutely.
Mary, do they ever kiss in this movie?
I believe they do.
I thought there was one moment where
there's one moment where, yes, on the boat. They're on a bateau mouche in the Seine.
That's right.
And they do kiss.
So
and she's the aggressor. So
yes, right.
It's really fun to watch that as well.
I'm trying to think about the difference between contemporary romances and this one. And that's the big distance for me. I'm always upset when there's way too much of that stuff going on, as well as violence. And this seems to have the moderate amount of both romance and violence that I think it's, you know, it makes it a really, like Cary Grant, a charming afternoon visit with old-time filmmaking, and particularly a gifted director.
Well, and interestingly, this film did receive nominations from BAFTA. It only got, and several others, it only got one Academy Award nomination, and that was for Henry Mancini's song, Charade.
Yeah.
But he also composed the soundtrack for this. And so that's another just wonderful aspect of this film that makes you enjoy it all the more.
It is not obtrusive.
No.
It's very subtle.
Not at all.
If you know the tune, you can hear it underneath, and it's a joy to pick it out.
Yes.
See, oh, yeah, he's reprising that, and it's part of the elegance of the film.
It
is. You know, for me. Four other romances, Mary. Well, let me just, I'm dying to say this. I don't, first of all, I'm going to ask you, did you uncover anything in your research that you want to talk about?
One thing about this film that is interesting before we talk about romances is at the time it was made, the rules for copywriting works was very specific. You actually had to have on the film either the C in the circle or the word copyright. They, for some reason, failed to do that with the film. So as soon as this film was released in 1963, it became public domain.
That's interesting.
Which is very unusual given the high level of people who were making this film and the studio. So for whatever reason, that did not happen, and this became public domain.
Yeah, and were there any other charades? Was there any imitation? There must have been a TV and somewhere
not
along
to
the
my
line.
Knowledge.
Yeah, me either.
I do think there was a remake of the storyline, one of the Wahlbergs, fairly recently. But the story was so greatly changed that it was loosely based on Charade. The original story was written as the unsuspecting wife, and the studios initially didn't like it, but then the writer serialized it in the women's magazine Red Book, and it became so popular that the studios took interest in it again, and hence we have the movie in 1963.
Yeah.
And the original author, I think, actually wrote the screenplay as well.
Peter Stone did the screenplay. He did the story, and Mark Bain, B-E-H, did the original story, I believe.
Yes.
Mary, the similarity between this and North by Northwest is only from almost the very first frame, at least in the titles. We have these geometric lines.
The very graphic, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, have you no shame? You're just imitating Alfred Hitchcock. It was a delightful connection.
Well, and it was intentional. Stanley Donen was a huge fan of Hitchcock. And so the opening credits, the use of the spiral represents vertigo. When we meet Charles Lampert, he's being thrown off the train. That's how the film opens. So we have a lot of things that are an loving homage to Alfred Hitchcock and his filmmaking.
As with Cary Grant's character in North by Northwest, this character also would appear to be an ordinary human being, put in extraordinary
circumstances.
Yes. Yeah. And I get that, although there's nothing ordinary about Cary Grant.
Well, not about him, but I would say that take is actually more true for Reggie. When we ultimately find out Cary Grant's character's true identity, it would make sense that he would be in extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
For her, married to the wrong guy, wants to get a divorce, and comes home and finds out their apartment's contents has been sold, he's been murdered, and she's believed to have $250,000 that all of these people are willing to kill her for to watch. She's the one who's actually in the position that Roger Thornhill was in, yeah, in North by Northwest.
Wonderful, yeah, yeah. It strikes me as somewhat fabulous that a woman of that class and intelligence didn't know her husband. Apparently didn't know anything about her husband.
Nope, no, she didn't. Well, she was the unsuspecting wife.
Yeah,
so
right.
It would ruin it if she suspected anything.
Yeah. Very much like Hitchcock. We had a lot of tension in this story. And the tension and the humor go together.
Yes, very much so. And I would say North by Northwest, of all of his films, is the one that matches that formula
the best. Oh, yes, definitely. Cary Grant is the wrong man. It's typical of Hitchcock. I had some other notes here about the espionage and the deception themes that Hitchcock loved. And somebody who has to prove his innocence. Now, Peter Joshua doesn't have to prove his innocence. He's a fake all the way through. whereas Thornhill just
no, it's a mistaken identity journey. Yes, yes. Yes, that's true.
But seemingly typical of a Hitchcock character. And you mention it, and I think they're wonderful. This is really one of the films that sets us on the kind of Bourne motif of going around the world in James Bond. These are, you know, reinforcing the notion of a European setting.
Yes, very much so. And it added to it that it was actually shot on location at some really iconic places, especially in Paris. I mentioned earlier that Cary Grant was reluctant to make this film because of the age difference with Audrey Hepburn.
Yes, yes.
And this is sadly the only film they made together because Cary retired a few years later. But when you think about both of their careers, they both played roles where the characters were definitely in May-December romances. You look at Audrey Hepburn's career, and she started out in Roman Holiday. In that film, she plays Princess Anna, who's clearly very young, barely out of teenager, and she and Gregory Peck, who's at least within her age range of about a decade or so, but clearly older, wiser, more experienced. But then she went on to be in Sabrina, where ultimately, although she was interested in William Holden's character, who again is closer to her in age, she ends up with Humphrey Bogart, who was 25 years older than she was, and much older than her character, Sabrina. You know, you follow that up with Funny Face, where a much older Fred Astaire falls for her as his ultimate muse. And this is still in the 1950s, so she's very much a younger woman in ingenue. But you see her in those roles of May-December romance. And Cary Grant also oftentimes was paired with a much younger woman. We have this film here, and before he retired, he did Father Goose, which I think is a very funny movie. But his love interest in that is a very much younger Leslie Caron. So you see this pattern in their careers, these May-December type romances.
And I want to make a side note that one of my favorite genres is the screwball comedy. And Cary Grant pretty much put his imprimatur on that with
Katharine Hepburn.
Yes, My Girl Friday.
No, well, that was Rosalind Russell. But he made Bringing Up Baby with Katharine Hepburn, The Philadelphia Story, film that he did not like, which didn't star Katharine Hepburn, but was ultimate screwball antics, was Arsenic and Old Lace.
Yes, and I have to admit, because I'm a word person, that I love it. anytime I get any even modern film, I say, oh, that's really in the screwball tradition. I love where they repartee.
When we talked earlier about how Charade is a multi-genre film, you get elements of the screwball comedy, you get elements of the romantic comedy,
yes.
you get mystery, suspense, thriller. It is an all-in-one film. And I don't think it was popular at the time it was released, but I don't think it got its classic due until within the past few years. It was actually added to the Library of Congress for film preservation, for which I am grateful.
Well, and I am grateful for your being here. And we have any final words about Charade, Mary?
I'd hate to try to add anything to the wonderful script, but it is a film that's just worth seeing for so many reasons. So if you have an hour and 50 minutes or so, find it online and enjoy.
I mean, you want to avoid bringing small kids because some of the more gruesome aspects of it. But one of the aspects that I love is the dialogue and the snappy, witty way in which it's delivered. The timing, impeccable timing, particularly for Grant. She's easy any way you go. She just delivers her lines beautifully. But Grant has a timing that is just memorable. It's a good one. It's called Charade. Mary, that's our light movie for the year.
That for the year?
Right.
It's only April.
I know.
That's a long runway of dark, evil films to come.